A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Welcome into the Paul Gallant Show. Not Paul Gallant in today. Once again, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and AJ Russ filling in for Paul Gallant. He returns on Monday, right? I assume so.
But I'm like 90% sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wouldn't expect you to know until about 9:45 on Monday morning. That's when I would hope you would know by 9:45 on Monday.
I mean, he's walking in at 9:55.
Yeah. Never mind. 11:45 is what I meant to say, not 9:45. That's my bad.
And also 55.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? That's funny that you say that. And welcome into the show. Again, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, AJ Russ in for Paul Gallant. But I have noticed in the times that I filled in for you, like Paul is still putting in audio clips for me to pull. Like at 11:45, we are reaching here, brother.
That's when he's still at his condo.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean.
It's like a 5-minute drive.
Yeah, because that was the next part of the information I was gonna unveil with the peek behind the curtain. Like he lives pretty close by, but he does all his prep at home, or at least before the show. He does stay usually late and do some work ahead of time after the show's over. But yeah, like he's not here yet when he's putting in that audio at 11:45, and I'm like, all right, like we're going to cut this off, right?
And as we continue to take you behind the curtain, let me just say Paul's address live on air. Just kidding.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, give out. You want to get out his phone number too?
Yeah,
let's just give out all his personal information. Let's dox him live on air. I have a return to that. All right, welcome into the show. Enough of a peek behind the curtain. We're going to lead off here with the Astros. Of course, we'll talk Texans as well, but a couple interviews coming up today at 1 o'clock. Old friend of the station, Brad Kellner, now with Texas Sports Unfiltered in Austin. He will join us again at 1 o'clock to preview the Longhorn season. Their training camp kicks off next week, and of course, the big week one game against Ohio State, just more than a month away. On that last Saturday in August, and then at 2 o'clock, Brad Gilmore, another Brad, probably too many Brads on the show. That's on me. But Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame, which you can hear alongside Booker T on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, mostly at 7 o'clock. He will join us to talk WWE and with SummerSlam a week away from this Saturday. So,
And then Brad Garrett on after that.
Everyone loves Raymond. It really is time we do a career retrospective on Brad Garrett. And surely we're reaching some sort of milestone. 30 years since now. All right. Anyway, Astros. I really was trying to delay as long as I could. Game last night.
Given the starting pitcher, we can still talk about syndicated TV shows.
Yeah. How long can that bit run? Like, I feel like it's – I think I heard you and Dell saying, like, I think I'm kind of tired of the
I'm tired of him being on the Major League roster.
Okay.
It's run its course as far as, 11 hits, 2 walks, 5 earned runs. That's where I'm like, you know what? It's less funny to go T-bone or whatever.
Right.
He's not one of the greats like Brandon Walter, Walter, we can still enjoy. Actually, has he been retired as Jamie Moyer? Yet?
Oh yeah, you're right. Jeremy Branham's initial nickname was.
I think he's so good that now he's just Brandon Walter.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think Jeremy actually apologized for that. Like he was doing it more like his throwing motion reminded him of Jamie
style,
Moyer, but it's like, I gotta respect your game more. Yeah. Jeremy's officially backed off.
Yeah.
He's actually graduated. You know what the new nickname is now?
God, is it another lefty?
It is.
Great.
It is a lefty great, actually. A Hall of Famer. Someone won 300-plus games.
Big unit?
No, Tom Glavine.
Okay. I guess he's more soft tossing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's still a little bit of a slight throwing the soft tosser thing.
Soft tossing lefty. That's all right.
Yeah, but Tom Glavine, I think that's definitely elevated from Jamie Moyer.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, congratulations to Brandon Walter for that elevation.
No congratulations to Jason Alexander.
No, all right, you mentioned it. Like, there was a part in the game, it was like, he's given up some hits and some runs, but he's actually pitching, like, better than, his pitching line showed. Like, a couple of those runs I thought were not, the one where he gave up I think it was a double to Butler, and you know, there was a couple plays that there wasn't any hard contact with that, and then the run comes home. Like, so Butler scores. There was a throwing error on the Butler steal attempt by Caratini. He advances the third, and then came home in a sack fly. Like, at that point, I'm like, okay, he's pitching better than the one run allowed, and that continued for a little while. But then, I mean, by a point that you get up to 11 hits, like I have to kind of take away the you pitch better than your stat line shows, like, label.
It was a worse start than the, but it was of the same vein of the Fromber start.
Because he had like seven hits.
Yeah,
seven
where it's innings. A lot of traffic, so you can't go like, you know, ace performance.
Pitch the gym.
Yeah, but Jason Alexander had a little bit less, you know, a lesser version of that because he let more runs score, also gave up four more hits. But yeah, it wasn't a, you know, giant blow up, you know, the game is over before it starts. But it definitely
a slow bleed more than blow up.
And it like dug him a hole, but it wasn't a complete like, okay, don't have to watch this now.
I didn't really feel they were out of it till it got to 5-0.
Exactly.
And then once it got to 5-0, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the odds are they're losing this one.
Yeah, it's a steep enough climb. I think that Jason Alexander, the good news is, given the reports or the, you know, announcements from the minor league affiliates of the Houston Astros, seems like his days are numbered as a player on the big squad. So that is the, you know, somewhat silver lining of yesterday, was that the Corpus Christi Hooks weekend series is going to be all Astros taking rehab starts.
Arrigetti, then Garcia, and then France, apparently.
Yes.
Although they did put at the bottom, like, subject exchange.
But they say that for all of them.
I feel like that's especially important with the Astros, though.
Could have done, like, maybe small font on the graphic, not in the body of the tweet. That makes me more worried. But, yeah, I agree that that is something to look forward to as much as you can look forward to a rehab start.
Will you allow me one more Seinfeld reference with Jason Alexander? Jason Alexander gave up 11 hits yesterday, yada, yada, yada. Arrigetti, Luis Garcia, and JP France are soon to return.
Well, you can't just yada, yada, yada.
I can yada, yada, yada the 11 hits. I can yada, yada, yada the 11 hits. Apologies for that one.
Okay,
that was a little hokey. Okay, now we're done.
I think we're retired.
Now we're done. One more.
Do you think when he gets sent down to AAA, he's still going to show up to the Daikin Park for a little while?
Pretend he still works there?
Yeah. Okay, now we're done.
Okay, now we're done. It's over.
No more Seinfeld.
All right, AJ, hold us accountable. No more Seinfeld references for Jason Alexander.
Unless you have a Seinfeld reference.
Oh, you got one more?
No, I don't.
Oh, damn.
How many episodes of Seinfeld do you think you've watched in your life?
Maybe one.
Okay.
Yeah, that show was over before he was born.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also, he's so young that he didn't watch, like, TBS.
The reruns, yeah.
TBS on reruns.
6 o'clock every night on TBS for a decade, yeah. But yeah, I mean,
just nodding his head.
Just, yeah, sure, Grandpa.
Yeah.
Tell me more about your TV.
It really is.
Tell me about your TV stories, Grandpa.
It is the meme of the old lady. Yeah, sure thing.
Oh, man. Like, that is what you mentioned, though, is the silver lining. Like, I mean, Jason Alexander was, I think the best way you could describe him was mid yesterday, which is probably the most favorable thing you could say.
Yeah, I mean,
but like you said, like, we didn't even mention Christian Javier in this, who made a start for Sugarland last night. Like, and I don't think France is going to JP France will figure into the equation for the Astros the rest of the year. But you're talking about three guys in Garcia, Arrigetti, and Javier, who, if those guys come back, and it looks like they could be back in like 2 weeks. Like, looks like we're fairly close. Not just that they're on the horizon, but they're really close. Like, if they return, then it doesn't matter what Jason Alexander is or isn't, because he won't be here.
Yeah, it sets more of a finish line on the Jason Alexander experience, and I think we're all of the mind that he's the first one out.
He's the first one out
of the rotation. Because he's already, like, kind of not.
Gusto also gone.
Yeah, it's more of the scheduling of when they play every day in a week that they throw one of these guys in there, whether it's Gusto.
That's what happened the last time Alexander started, too.
And Alexander, the same thing. So, yeah, I think Arrigetti, I know Chandler Rome last week was speculating that Arrigetti will probably get this one last rehab start and may continue to build up on the Astros roster. So he'll make starts
like,
with the Astros.
Kind of be like a opener plus. Like
exactly.
He'll be like two, three innings on the major league roster.
I forgot what the pitching, like his pitch count numbers have been, but they've been steadily improving. They're not Shohei Ohtani levels of he's pitching one inning. Now he's pitching two innings.
Right.
Like he's progressing a little bit farther than that. Also, you know, it is a broken bone as opposed to a ligament. So it is more of a accelerated timeline, not just in the amount that he's out, but also how fast he can rehab. So I would expect Arrigetti up sooner than the other three pitchers that are making rehab.
Well, I would say him and Javier could both be up in the next 2 weeks. Garcia and France, I think, are a little further behind.
It might just be a difference in like a turn of the rotation. Yeah.
It could be. Yeah. I think really there's a possibility that the group of, you know, Jason Alexander, Colton Gordon, well, Ryan Gustav's mostly a bullpen guy at this point, but that kind of group of pitchers that you're kind of piecemealing it, or maybe have two more starts before they're eventually replaced by the guys you hope to have there all season.
I noticed. I noticed you didn't say Brandon Walter.
No, Brandon Walter.
He's in the rotation for you.
Look, we'll get more to this at 12:45 because we have a new segment alert. We need like a sounder for that when we have a new segment. But anyway, new segment alert. We're going to do the Island of Relevancy, and part of that will be with these AAA Astros. Okay. Basically, I'm rebranding because I'm a wrestling nerd. I'm rebranding a Circle of Trust. I think everyone can see through that. It's kind of what I do. I take something, I rebrand it in wrestling.
Yeah. Hey, garbage time. It's definitely not News of the Weird, folks.
Exactly. And it's definitely not a segment I did back at the Texans flagship 10 years ago called With All Due Respect. It's the same segment.
Different idea.
No, it's completely different. No one's ever No one's ever done like a lightning round. The lightning round, sometimes they call it. Well, John Lancey, what have you learned one sentence?
Weekend,
that's kind of. Yeah, similar to that. Anyway, everything in radio.
In case you missed it.
Yeah,
Paul Galacho.
Yes, thank you. What I hope you can take from this is Jason Alexander is done, and everything in radio.
Not creative.
And everything in radio was stolen.
Yes.
Yes. That's what you need to learn from this segment. A couple other quick thoughts before we go ahead and get to break. I think this is not an original thought, much like everything else in radio, but how annoying is it that this continues to happen? Now, at least this guy has some name cachet, some name recognition, but Luis Severino had a 5.10 ERA coming into that game last night. Now, he did get the benefit of two really bad strike three calls on one on Cam Smith, one on Mauricio Dubon, where the ball was like felt like 6 inches to a foot outside or inside in the case of Dubon. But man, 5.10 ERA coming in, and dude goes up there, 7 innings, no walks, 8 strikeouts. And basically just completely shuts down the Astros lineup. They scored 2 runs, but I believe they're both – no, one was on a ground ball out, one was on a sack fly. So they didn't even really have the hit to score the run. It feels like the Astros – I don't know if they – this is more anecdotal than something I have evidence for, but it feels like the Astros lead the league in this guy sucks but shuts down the Astros type games.
Yeah. It is something where even going back to when there are – a dominant team, which this team is very good. You know,
best record in the American League.
Yeah, I was gonna say went into yesterday with the best record in the American League.
Only half game out.
But in those like 2019 years, where it's like Carlos Correa is batting seventh on this lineup,
right.
Even then, you'd have jobbers with 7 ERAs come in and maybe not shut down the Astros, but definitely raise their or lower their ERA in that game. So or lose to terrible teams. That was another thing that they did. So it's an annoying thing that they do. It is, I would say, a symptom of their issue that we can quantify with runners in scoring position.
For sure, they had opportunities last night.
Yeah, where these pitchers with higher ERAs normally they still are letting guys on. It's just that the Astros can't have that big inning against them. So, that is just an annoying thing, especially in a game like last night, where despite the poor start, I'd say, from Alexander, that, you still have a chance to win when you go, we're still pitching or we're still hitting against Luis Severino, who has a 5.5 ERA.
Yeah, like if a guy with the remove the name from it. If a guy with the 5.10 ERA is your opponent, and you know that your opponent is only going to score 5 runs. Mm-hmm. 5 runs is obviously above the A's average.
Yeah, but to the bullpen.
Exactly. That feels like a game you should be in, and they weren't blown out like we said earlier, but it never fully felt like they threatened to take the
game
either.
They're on the back foot.
Yeah, they're on the back foot, exactly. One more quick note. We mentioned the three pitchers, four including Javier, making rehab starts for the Astros minor league system. Someone else that was moved to AAA Sugarland yesterday was Jacob Melton, their outfielder, who, man, it's been a while since he was out with that ankle injury.
It was so long I forgot which injury it was.
He came up. He was here for like a week, maybe 2 weeks, hurt the ankle, yeah. And he hasn't been up since. But he in three at-bats last night for Sugarland, he had a single that was 107.9 off the bat, a double that was 111 miles per hour off the bat, and then a flyout that was 102 off the bat. So, I mean, maybe that's reading too much into the stat page, but it feels like Jacob Melton also, like if we're talking about guys that could be here to help, Javier, Arrigetti seem like they're close. Jacob Melton squaring up the ball, and the Astros could certainly need some help in the outfield, so we're not having to play the Cooper Hummels anymore.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, who do you... Because Trammell...
Trammell, who had three more hits yesterday.
I forgot Hummel. Hummel would be the odd man out there. But, yeah, I'm willing to take encouraging exit velo from a small sample size, simply because it resulted in two hits.
Yeah, like if he was 0-for-3, I don't know if I would have brought it up. And if the Astros would have won, I don't know if I would have brought it up. But they lost 5-2, and two of the balls resulted in hits. So.
To me, April Christian Walker just called.
Yeah, see, that's that. Well,
0-for-4 was some also, encouraging exit velo.
Also, Jose Abreu, because we had to talk about barrel rate when Jose, we were trying to justify Jose Abreu's drop in power. But anyway, all right, got to go ahead and get out here for the break. On the other side, we're going to talk about some of the big moves, or one of the big moves, starting off with now a week till the just under a week to the Major League Baseball trade deadline. The Mariners made a move. Do the Astros need to respond? That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
This is the Paul Gallant Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. It is the Paul Gallant Show, but Paul Gallant is out, was all this week. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and AJ Russ filling in. And you can join in on the conversation if you have any thoughts on what the Astros didn't do last night or what they should do ahead of the trade deadline next week. You can call us or text us on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So, not only did the Mariners win to take a game away in the lead in the AL West, Sean, but they also made a trade. Now, my gut reaction, I think, whenever the Mariners make a trade for a bat is like, well, it doesn't matter. Their ballpark is where hitters go to die. Although Randy Arozarena has had some good moments for them this year, and Cal Raleigh is obviously otherworldly.
Gonna hit 70
it feels
home
like
runs.
It's no one can hit their asterisks except for Kyle Raleigh.
Yeah.
But they add a bat, a left-handed first baseman from Arizona. Arizona now clearly after the Astros swept them in the seller's market, so maybe the Astros
should have dropped one.
Well, maybe they should place a phone call and see what else the Diamondbacks are willing to move. Yeah. And we'll get into that in a second because there's some rumors out there about another one of the Diamondbacks players. But the Mariners get first baseman Josh Naylor, which, I mean, on its surface, if you don't care or just dismiss the ballpark factors and how hard it is to hit a Seattle for everyone other than Cal Raleigh, then they got a really good player with Josh Naylor. Josh Naylor, he's a 28-year-old first baseman. This year hitting .292 with his batting average with a .124 OPS plus, has 11 home runs. Career OPS plus of .114, so again, average is 100. He's above average, even more so this year than his career. Career OPS of .812 against right-handed pitchers, and he was an all-star last year with Cleveland. I mean, I don't think it moves the needle to the point of, uh-oh, you got to worry about your lead, but I certainly think the Mariners got better yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to put it. That they got better, but it's not so much better to where the lead feels less safe.
Yeah, I think it worries me more in individual games against them than it does as far as losing the lead.
Yes, exactly, where it makes them more formidable, but it's not a a team defining trait or anything. Yeah, Naylor's a good bat. He's someone where, you know, I guess if the Astros hadn't paid Christian Walker, it's someone that Astros could have used, but just positionally, it would not have worked for the Astros. But yeah, I think that it's something.
Although Naylor playing a little better than Christian Walker.
No, I'm saying in the world where they don't sign.
Yeah,
Christian
I know.
Walker
I'm just saying yet. I know the Astros, a lot of these conversations, because there's, you know, other names will come up and like, well, you can't really do it because in the world where you get, you know, Isak back and you have Christian Walker and Yordan has to be your, in the world where Yordan comes back, he has to be your DH, like you're kind of restricted from adding the corner infielder. But like, I don't know if you're willing to be ruthless and just put the best players on the field, not saying they should have traded for Josh Naylor. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But Josh Naylor, I would rather have in a vacuum over Christian Walker.
Yeah, because there's a world where Yordan Alvarez doesn't come back. You know,
yeah, certainly his hands clearly not healed.
Some people would have it as that's the more likely outcome. I think I'm probably on the 45-55 level of that. Of
which side are you on?
He comes back 55.
Yeah,
comes back in some form. Comes back. Maybe it's another 25 games, and then he realizes he can't go. You know, like it could. I'm not saying he comes back and is, you know, Yordan Alvarez that we all know and love for the rest of the season. But I do think, given his quotes that he gave to Chandler Rome, or I think it was an availability.
Yeah,
but
McTaggart had some of the same quotes.
But the desire to come back is there, although there does not seem to be a clear path of rehab that's there.
No, not really.
But yeah, I think that as far as that goes, you kind of I think you can operate as far as like I'm not too worried about stepping on specifically Alvarez and Paredes's toes with someone that you get, especially if they're just a rental of, well, what happens when Paredes comes back? Well, it's like Paredes might be out for months, dude. Well, like
you mentioned that there's a non-0% chance that Yordan just doesn't come back. You could say the same thing about Paredes.
Yeah.
I mean, especially from the Astros. Like, if the Astros are telling you, oh, this is severe, he's out.
Dead?
Yeah, he might be dead. Like, it's usually, guys, obviously Yordan, I mean, Tucker they thought was going to be back in 3 days last year. Yeah. Yordan they thought was going to be back quick. They didn't think Jeremy Peña was going to miss any time.
Jake Myers,
exactly. Like, if the Astros are publicly telling you, oh, this is bad, it could be a while, he might be dead.
Yeah, and just the...
We might need a wellness check on Isak Paredes.
I think he was on Instagram.
He was. I know. He's getting his hair dyed.
The last couple hours we have covered. but the just the way that he, you know, got hurt. Like, we've all watched enough sports to see, like, what a bad hamstring injury looks like. And that was a bad one.
He was hopping down to first base.
Not a,
put any weight on it.
That's not a 2 weeks and then we'll see. That's a month at least. And
yeah,
so,
I mean, Nico Collins, a different sport, missed 5 weeks. You know, for the Texans last year, and he still ran off the field. Like he caught a touchdown, kept injured, it kept running,
exactly.
And then basically ran right to the locker room, kind of like walk off fashion. Yeah. So and that was 5 weeks, and I've certainly the just from what you saw the reaction be on the field, like Nico Collins certainly didn't seem to be in nearly as much pain as Isak. So yeah. I mean, I think it could be even longer than what Nico missed.
And with the
obviously
versatility,
different sport again.
Yeah. And with the versatility that you have with the rest of your team of Mauricio Dubon can play third base, can play second base. So as far as it goes with Astros deadline targets, to me, both positions are on the table just because if you get a good deal for a second baseman, Mauricio Dubon, your everyday third baseman. If you get a good deal for a third baseman, maybe more of a rental because you have more team control on Isak, and I don't think that's going to be a long, you know, it affects 2026.
It shouldn't affect next year, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then Mauricio Dubon, congratulations. You're the everyday second base. Or Bryce Matthews, you're the everyday second baseman, depending on how he comes along in his stint with the Astros. So I think that you have some versatility. I think you have some options where there's only a couple positions on the field where you don't need a bat or you can't make a bat work. You know,
yeah, like right field, Cam Smith's your right fielder.
Yeah, but most right fielders, you can stick them in left. You
know?
Yeah,
true.
And so I think that's the position that they're in where they should be targeting a starter level lefty bat at half the positions on the diamond. I mean, you could even go a platoon at center field when Jake Myers comes back and get a lefty there who hits righties well. But, you know, it, again, is a platoon split where Jake Myers. I mean,
Taylor Trammell might be your platoon with Jake Myers, though.
I mean, the way he's hitting,
I'm not trying to rush him out of regular playing time.
That's absolutely correct. And that's just the, you know, lineup help, which I think is slightly more of a issue or more of a need than help to help in the rotation.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Now, before we go to break, the big kind of out of nowhere rumor that hit the Astros interwebs yesterday was I'd never heard of this reporter. Honestly, I didn't know his game before yesterday, but a guy named Francis Romero. I think I'm pronouncing his first name right. It's Francis, Francis? Francis? I don't know. Anyway, hey. Francis Romero reported that the Astros are showing interest in
Eugenio Suarez.
Thank you. I should have just teed it up to you. I was going to try to take a stab.
Genie Suarez.
Yeah, Genie Suarez.
Gene Suarez. Nice to meet you.
Gene Suarez. He sounds like an accountant. But no, Gene Suarez.
Again, for all the listeners out there, is Eugenio Suarez the third baseman for the Arizona Diamondbacks that you just saw
here
earlier
too
this
after
week.
We refer to by me as Gene Suarez because I can't say the name. I struggle
maybe if
mightily.
He actually gets traded to the Astros.
I will look. I'm trying. This is not even a shot or anything. I literally just I try. You can see on the Google Doc. I ran out phonetically, and I still couldn't say it. This is a reflection upon me and nobody else.
Yes.
But anyway, 36 home runs, league-leading 86 RBI, 149 OPS plus. I mean, outside of Carl Raleigh and Aaron Judge probably having the best offensive year in baseball. And Francis Romero is reporting the Astros are now in on Gene Suarez. Like, I think I heard you, Adele, the other day say Bryce Matthews was off the table.
Untouchable.
So, like, I don't know if you can get that deal done without including Bryce Matthews. Like, looking at their minor league system, I do think they have – some people disagree on this, but I think they have enough with their top four major league prospects or minor league prospects with along with Bryce Matthews, obviously their catcher Yannick, the first-round pick a few years ago, Jacob Melton, who we talked about in the last segment, and then their pitcher for AAA, who's having a great season, especially when you consider the ballpark factors for PCL, playing in the PCL, Ulloa. So I think between those four guys, if you're willing to give up two of them, you could pull off a trade for Gene Suarez. But I guess, even when you said Bryce Matthews was untouchable, was that even factoring in the idea that Suarez would be available, or would be willing to bend up upon that to get this deal done?
I wasn't thinking about Eugenio Suarez being
sorry, go ahead.
I wasn't thinking about Suarez being available, but I still think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because this is how much I didn't think he was an option for the Astros.
I don't think anybody did.
He is a rental. We're talking about a guy in the last year of his contract, correct?
I will look that up as you're making your point.
I think that Bryce Matthews is of the level and also plays a position where he very easily can step in and be the starter, if not this year, next year, where I think you're weakening yourself a little too much by trading for him if Eugenio Suarez is a rental.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm almost there. It's loading.
It's all right.
Wi-Fi is moving a little slow here.
Help me out. That's exactly
where I'm at.
I think the deal would be tough. It'd be like, and this is a deal that hasn't really come back to bite you given where these prospects are at in their baseball career so far. But it would remind me of the trading Ryan Clifford and Drew Gilbert for Justin Verlander. Well, although they did get more than one year. Yeah, they did get more than 1 year out of Justin Verlander, but by the end it was not worth the price of poker. But I think that Bryce Matthews is of the caliber where I'm
confirmed he is a rental.
Thank you.
Wi-Fi finally came through.
Yeah, so to me it's not worth it because in 2026, you're not going to have Suarez or Matthews. And now this is a team who their window's always open as long as Jim Crane is owning this team. And I think you have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I I get not wanting, like, Bryce Matthews and Eulola of the four I mentioned are the only two where I'm like,
less
like,
touchable.
Yeah, yes, yes. Let's keep going down that road. Like, you could touch Yannick, you could touch Melton. Yeah. If I'm Dana Brown,
if Melton and Yannick get it done,
yeah, exactly. Call it like in. Melton, I know. Look, he was he was their gosh, what year did they get him? But he's been one of their top prospects for a few years now, and look, he looked good yesterday in his rehab start. But like, I don't think he's shown something to the level of being untouchable. Like I'd
agree.
Yeah, like I mean, Jake Myers is going to be your center fielder for at least a few more years. Cam Smith's obviously your future. Like I'm not worried about like you trade Jacob Melton, all of a sudden your outfield future is just dead. And then same thing with Yannick. Like I mean, you have Yiner Diaz here. I wouldn't be opposed to trying to re-sign Victor Caratini, although that might get too expensive. And Yannick has not produced well offensively so far in his limited amount of playing time over the last, well, not limited, but limited window over the last year and a half.
Yeah,
he got drafted last year. Yeah, last year. Like, so he's played a season and a half, and his offensive number is not that impressive. So I'm impressed by Eulola. I'm impressed by Bryce Matthews. I'd like them to stay. But if Yannick plus Jacob Melton and, you know, fillers gets it done, then I'd be absolutely in on Gene Suarez.
Yeah, yeah. I think
that's my offer.
I think
take it or leave it, Arizona.
Yeah, and I could, if Eulola gets it done, like if that's the like hard line where it's you know, maybe you keep Yannick or Melton, but it's Eulola. It's, you know, the classic thing of like, I hate it, but that might get the trade done. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like you sometimes you have to make
Eulola might
you have to, you have to make a painful trade every once in a while to get like the top guy.
I think I'd be more willing to deal Bryce Matthews than Eulola. Is that a hot take that you're not willing to?
I disagree.
Eulola's numbers in AAA again, PCL. I mean, maybe because like, ERA it's 3.5, which you might go on the surface. Well, that's not impressive, but given the fact where it's in the PCL,
yeah, and this might be, you know, caveman baseball fan Sean here being like, I haven't seen this guy pitch.
Yeah, fair. No, I'm looking at numbers.
They've used four AAA pitchers so far. Why did they use this guy? We got what, four Jason Alexander starts?
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe they just view that
they could be slow. This is caveman Sean comes in and goes, there's multiple factors at play here. I understand. But just making the case of, you know.
Yeah, actually, that's not where I thought you were going to go with that. But if you had gone this way, I would agree with it. So I'm going to make my own point. I'm going to make my own point, but give you credit for it. How about that?
Perfect.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm turning off my mic.
But the Astros have shown such an ability with who the bleep is that guy, quote Conor McGregor, with, you know, Colton Gordon and Ryan Gusto and Jason Alexander. And Brandon Walter. But Jason Alexander's first start was pretty good. Like, they've shown such an ability to
Ronel Blanco,
JP France
like, 2 years ago. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, that they've shown such an ability to get a lot out of randos that I don't necessarily feel like, even if Eulola is a high-level pitching prospect, which I don't even believe there's such a thing as a pitching prospect because of the injury rate. That's another discussion for another time.
Agree.
But even if Eulola is that guy, the Astros have shown such an ability to find replacement-level guys and turn them into serviceable players that I don't feel like they need to hold on to their top pitching prospects.
Now to that, I don't even know whose point I'm making now.
I don't know. I think I'm
going against you speaking for me.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's where we are.
So now
I'm following the flowchart
for you. that at a certain point you do need a high level starter. Like
sure.
You do need the Hunter Brown. You do need a replacement for Framber Valdez, who will not be on the Astros next season. All more than likely.
Yeah.
So if you think that Eulola does have that like number one, number two starter potential, you do keep. I think you keep
equation.
That guy, especially because you are the Houston Astros. You do need to have some, you know, confidence in your pitching development there.
Yeah, and certainly since you're also not going to go out in top of the market and in the free agency,
you're not
going to replace those guys. Yeah,
I do like this segment where we
we give each other's points.
We disagree with our own points.
We should turn this into a bit.
Talk out of both sides of our mouths for both of us.
One quick text before we go to break. I guess he missed the first part of the segment. But 0002 asks, deal them for what, BMAC? This will be dealing for Gene Suarez, which you might not know who Gene Suarez is. That's just because I refuse to try to.
Try it one more time.
No, I don't. Look, why are you trying to embarrass me? Why are you trying to embarrass me? AJ, what is he doing to me? All right, I've got the pronunciation in the Google Doc.
Say it slowly.
See, I felt like I should say it fast because I could get through it and maybe like fake the confidence that I knew how to say
it. Okay, however you feel like it needs to be done.
Eugenio Suarez.
Pretty good.
Okay,
pretty
good. All right.
We're 7.5 out of 10.
Okay, that'll pass high school.
I think that is the pronunciation equivalent of C's get degrees.
That's what I was thinking.
Just good enough to where I'm like,
I'm not going to embarrass myself.
I know who you're talking about. All right. I know what name you're trying to say.
Okay. All right. Other side of the break, we got to get out. We're way over. Astros conversation went long. Let's talk about some Texans training camp. And don't forget, 1 o'clock, Brad Kelmer, friend of the station, will join us to talk about Longhorns. They're starting up here. They're training camp in a week. And then obviously the opener against Ohio State coming up in just less than a month. Then 2 o'clock, Brad Gilmore, another Brad, will join us to talk WWE. And at 2:30, Mount Rushmore plus one. Comes to a Friday, usually on Saturdays, but now on a Friday. That when the Paul Gallant Show returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Not about Paul Gallant. It's Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and AJ Russ filling in for Paul Gallant. He'll be back on Monday. If you want to join in the conversation, weigh in on what the Astros should do heading up to the trade deadline. Should they be aggressive? Should they go all in? Jeff Passan was quoted in one of his articles talking about, you know, what each team would needs and what their mindset is going in. He had the Astros as adding but not all in, which I thought was interesting. But should they go all in? Let us know. Call or text HRMP listener line 713-780-3776. So we're talking Texans training camp right now. Brad Kelmer of Texas Sports Unfiltered coming up next to talk Longhorns in the next segment at 1 o'clock. But one of the interesting things coming out from training camp yesterday, because not much going on today with the weather, they practice inside. Not only were they not in pads, but they're also not in helmets, so really not doing much of anything other than maybe standing around and discussing lunch plans or trying to set up games of College Football 26. But
I would like a flow chart or maybe just like a chart of helmet, but no pads, pads, no helmets, full pads. Like
apparently full
shells.
Pads, I think, start Monday.
Yeah, like I think starts Monday. I would just like a, you know. The color coordinate it maybe of just like which days are which.
Back in my day, it was the one that wasn't even a conversation.
Yeah,
what do you mean no pads.
When did 2 days start?
Not soon enough. Extended. That's what I'm saying. Back when men were men. Anyway, John Harris of Texans, HoustonTexans.com. Speaking of menly men.
Yeah.
John Harris of HoustonTexans.com, I thought, had an interesting observation about. Certainly one of the guys I think people will be most interested in seeing how he performs during the training camp or preseason because of what he can mean to the biggest question mark on the Texans roster, and that is their second-round pick, Ursary, who, of course, we hope helps fix the offensive line that was such a problem protecting C.J. Stroud last year. But he had a couple of quotes here that I want to read that I thought were pretty promising. Now, again, everything has to be taken with the context and the asterisk of they're not in full pads. We're not even in preseason. So this is all needs to be taken with a grain of salt, but that's all we have to really talk about right now. So it's grain of salt season. But the quote from John Harris, and he this was coming from a quote from Titus Howard where he called Ursary, quote, the truth, which I thought was the nickname of Paul Pierce.
It is.
Yeah, so maybe a little gimmick infringement. I don't know if Paul Pierce wants to consider lawsuit there.
People will just say, like, that guy's the truth.
I know. You know? But yeah, can Paul Pierce really claim ownership of the truth? Does he have it trademarked? I don't know. These are questions for another time.
I don't want to give it to him, but I think I do have to give
Should we call up our boy who's in Florida now? Ask his thoughts.
I know what he's going to say.
I know what he's going to say. Anyway, so John Harris talking about that quote from Titus Howard. So he says, okay, position group mates will have each other's back, but I've watched Ursary as much as I can through the first couple of practices, and I don't think Titus is far off, honestly. The former Gopher All-American is going to struggle at times against the two-star defensive ends on this roster, but Ursary is long, strong, and possesses enormously powerful backside, which you and Paul did a bit about Lance's write-ups becoming
the erotic,
football porn. I mean, if I read that in a certain voice talking about his long, strong, and possesses an enormously powerful backside, that could be taken a completely different way.
Yeah, plus he doesn't
back down.
I think
it just
was.
Yeah, plus he doesn't back down. The quote continues, though. When he was at right tackle during a team period, he did, quote, get got by Anderson on a pass play, and he's never played that side, so there's some adjustment to being on that side of the line for him. But when Ursary run blocks, there is a distinct difference from him and some of the other guys on the offensive line because of his strong build and immense power. Yes, I know there were no pads being worn currently, but what I've seen in these two practices matches what I saw from him at Minnesota. So if we're looking for the, not the silver lining, but the light at the end of the tunnel to where, because part of my problem in trying to come around to the idea that the offensive line could be better. It's like, well, they didn't really add much. Like, you can't tell me that a group that was bad subtracts its best player in Laramie Tunsil and then is better. I know the kind of the, you know, five fingers make a fist, the chemistry thing.
Coaching mentality, all that.
That was being sold. It was hard for me to buy. But if Ursary is showing the promise that John Harris is talking about, and I have no reason not to believe him, then maybe that is the line of tunnel. Like, if Ursary is that dude, and some of these other guys are at least serviceable or meet what they've done in their past, specifically Cam Robinson, then maybe there is a light at the tunnel here with this offensive line.
Yeah, especially with how Harris describes Ursary, with the run blocking being a plus. And to me, it's like, well, if you have questions about all these guys in pass protection, give me the guy who's questionable in pass protection, but is a giant plus in run blocking. Who's the best run block? If we're just going to assume, like, C.J. Stroud's going to be a tough season.
It's going to be rough for your buddy.
Yes, but the way you can kind of counteract that is by leaning into a more run-first identity and more of a...
I don't know if you know this, Sean. The run can set up the pass.
It sure can. And maybe this 2025 Texans, what they're going into each week is trying to, dare I say, establish the run.
Oh, that speaks to my heart.
Yeah,
Thank you.
But I mean, I think this is overall pretty positive, Ursary. I would say it really gives me, I'd say some glimmer of hope, because although it is 2 days of training camp and it is
no pads.
Yes, yeah. But I do think that the. Because of how even keel, I would say, this praise is of it, it does acknowledge that he is getting got by Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter.
I mean, who isn't? I mean,
yeah,
that's.
But it's not
the...
all. It's not all sunshines and rainbows. It is pretty like here's the cons, here's the pros. And right now, I'm interested in what these guys' pros are. Like, what's the positives? Because we know what the negatives are. And so I think to me I am. Encourage as much as you can be in the first week of training camp by this write-up.
Now, a texter, 1429, points out something I was thinking as you were talking. So, mind meld here with 1429. I agree with what you're saying. Like, okay, we know these guys struggle in this area, so just tell me who can do the other thing well.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather have the guy that can do one thing well than no things well, right? Not to state the obvious. But the problem is, if we're talking about, well, give me the guy who can run block but can't pass block, it's kind of what Kenyon Green was.
Yeah.
I'm not putting Kenyon Green on Ursary. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But, like, I mean, that is the way we would have described Kenyon Green before we figured out he could not stay on the field.
Yes, and I guess I should amend, if you're good enough at pass block, like,
yes,
if you're passable.
A base level.
What I'm saying,
right.
Yeah, if you're even with Cam Robinson or Blake Fisher, and it pass blocking, they're both whatever fours, but run blocking, Ursary's a seven or eight, and the other guys are sixes. Like, give me the seven or eight in run blocking.
I think that's described well. So sticking with the offensive line for a second, and again, we'll have Brad Kellner on next segment to talk Longhorns with us. But I think what people are being, and look, I think this is a product of it being July. You know, we're searching for things to talk about.
First,
us.
First couple days.
Yeah, I mean, not only us, but people on media on Twitter, fans on Twitter. But when people keep putting out, like, here's the five offensive linemen that broke with the first group.
Does not matter at all.
Not only does it matter, like, on the average year for the average team, I think it means even less this year because they're not even hiding this. They're very open with it. D'Amico's talked about it, you know, several times. Like, they have so few locks on the offensive line, really. Maybe Tytus Howard, that's it. Maybe you could argue Cam Robinson and Tytus Howard, that's it. That they're just going to keep running out, you know, different versions of these groups time and time again, mixing it up, trying to see what works, what doesn't. I don't think we can really take anything from, okay, these are the five offensive linemen, at least until, you know, preseason games start being played, at the very earliest.
Yeah, I was going to say, and even then.
Even then, if we're Tytus Howard about one is, series.
Well, yeah. Also, if preseason game one, Tytus Howard isn't suited up.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I don't care what the lineup is. So, yeah, I think that... yeah, what you said is correct, that it normally doesn't really matter. It matters even less because no one's locked in. So if you had, you know, just a hypothetical line where just the center and right tackle were question marks, but the other three were relative locks or, you know, either big free agent acquisition, whatever it is. But it was just two positions that we're looking at. Okay, that makes it a little bit more, you know, okay, that. You know, maybe this guy has a lean. Maybe this guy at one position has a... But this, it's a bunch of guys who can find... a bunch of guys who are being tried out, basically, at different positions. You know, we have Ursary in the write-up from John Harris.
He's played right and left, yeah.
Yeah, playing right and left, and he acknowledges, never played right tackle before.
Yeah, exactly. So, they're experimenting. There's not a lot we could take from this right now. The one thing, and we'll go out on this, but the one thing I think you can start to take, especially next week when they put pads on Monday, and according to what we've heard, it was one way on day one, the opposite on day two. But if we start to hear that the offense is ahead of the defense, not only because of the quality of the Texans defense, but also because this time of year, defenses are almost always ahead of the offense just because, I mean, they pin their ears back and go. It's much less orchestrated than the offense. Like, if we start to hear when pads get put on that Stroud and these new wide receivers, especially the Iowa State guys, are clicking and they're not having their way, but succeeding more than they're failing against this defense, I think that is something to actually put some credence into.
Yes. I just don't think that'll happen. But
I don't either. And again, day one, apparently the offense did win the day, quote unquote, but day two, it reverted back to what you would expect.
Yeah, and last season, I remember talking with DJ Bienname, who had come on, and it was, and Paul being there at practice almost every day. I don't want to say it was a sweep by the defense for training camp, but it was pretty darn close. And you could tell in our tone of like, well, you know, it is early, but a lot of new pieces on this.
Well, that's why it would be Texans offense. That's why I think it'd be newsworthy if it was to be.
Yeah.
I don't know what the odds are. I'm not saying.
I was gonna say it almost would circle all the way back around to not being newsworthy because it would seem so flukish that this offense...
It almost becomes the point of not that the offense is doing well. It's like, oh no, did someone get hurt?
Exactly. What's wrong with the defense?
We wouldn't believe it. All right. We got to get out because on the other side of the break, Brad Kellner from Texas Sports Unfiltered will join us to talk Longhorns. Big game coming up just over a month from now against Ohio State to open the season for the Longhorns, who certainly are one of the favorites to win the national title. That one, the Paul Gallant Show returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.